Welcome to the Today Is Show with James and Danny. My name is James.
I'm Danny.
And today we have a very special guest. He is a podcaster. He is a political commentator, entrepreneur, all kinds of different things. Some say he is the great noticer. Some have been calling him that. We have Matt Kim in the studio with us today. How you doing, Matt?
Not clap? Is that
not a no? I clapped.
James didn't clap.
I didn't. I was
just saying. I'm noticing. No. James didn't clap.
So far. Yeah.
Okay. Clap. Yes. Okay. So, what are some of the things that you have been noticing recently? Just an open conversation here.
Well, so I put up this video on Instagram talking about this new Trump kind of Gaza plan for post kind of the Gaza war. And, you know, they've published, it kind of leaked this blueprint of what they want to build, right? The hotels and the highways and the data centers and the Elon Musk manufacturing zone, whatever. It's all there.
Elon Musk manufacturing zone.
I mean, it's, you know, it's like a real document. This is what they're circulating. Like, okay, what do we do to rebuild this? And hey, where are we going to put the Trump Riviera and hotels? And, you know, it's got nice waterfront view. Like, where are we putting this? Cool. So I put this video on Instagram in a short form. And I also put it on TikTok. On Instagram, it got like 1.7, maybe 2 million views, something in that range. Because it's interesting. Like, wow, like this is actually, they have a plan. And on TikTok, it's at like 30,000 views.
Huh. That's been happening to me as well. It's been happening to most of my videos recently. You saw the one I put up about Taylor Swift. It's not really about Taylor Swift.
I told you that was your best work.
Thank you. And it went viral on Instagram, but then nothing on it. It had like maybe, what is it, 40,000 or 50,000 views on TikTok. And I don't know. Maybe I think my account is under some kind of observation from the TikTok people. But so how do you, so I know you're a big Trump guy and you've been for a long time, but lately you've been, you know, you've been one of those people. I enjoy your work just because you're willing to call it out as it is. You're like, I don't think he's doing a lot of stuff that he said he was going to do. So what's your assessment of him so far? Now we're what, 8 months in, 10 months in, nine, 10 months in?
I voted for Trump in 2016. I voted for him in 2020. I like the 2016 to 2020 version of Trump a lot.
Same.
You know, so what do you think? Yeah. What is the biggest difference for you, you know, between the 2016 era and now 2025?
I think the biggest problem with at least the persona of Trump is that, you know, you need people, especially if you're watching characters on TV, you kind of want to see an evolution, right? You want to see them change a little bit, adapt. But he's doing the same things and the same rhetoric and the same style that he was doing in 2016. I think people are just fatigued with it because you look for character development. You know, even world leaders, they're like, all right, Trump said he's going to do this in 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019. And then he's saying the same thing again. Like, well, I think we just wait him out at this point, you know, because in the beginning, you're like, oh, shit, this guy is crazy. Like, we don't know what he's going to do. So everyone's on edge. Okay, let's just comply with him because he may do something crazy. And now they're like, oh, he's probably not actually doing something.
You think that the back and forth with the tariffs really lost him a lot of, I guess, accountability or respectability from abroad? People were like, wow, this guy is, he says he's going to do something. He's not going to do something. Seems like a difficult person to.
Yeah, I mean, when he announced the tariffs, it made it sound like he's going to do this and everyone's going to comply. But then all these countries, Taiwan, Korea, you know, even China, they're like, we don't think we're going to do this. <You know? laughs> And they're like, no, you got to do it. And like, no, like,
we don't.
Yeah, we don't. Actually, this is not that great for our country.
Because I was going to be, I was initially sort of on board with the idea of tariffs because they were very popular back in the days. Even Bernie Sanders, who, you know, I was a big Bernie guy back in the days, he was saying almost the same things in 2015 when he was running for president. And so I'm like, hey, guys, are you guys hating on tariffs just because Trump proposed them? Because people on the left were saying it for many years. But then the way it was implemented seemed kind of sketchy.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to get really aggressive then, which I get why. But
It's also the course. You got to stay the course.
It takes like some negotiation. If it's a trade war, you have to figure out how to win the war. You can't stay. You're going to do all these big things. And if the other side says, no, like we're not even going to engage. We'll just wait this out. There's actually other buyers in the world now, because it worked maybe back then because the US was doing all the buying.
Mm.
But the global economy has changed. And there are other players in the world that can pick up the slack and do some of the buying or do some of the trading. And you can't apply the same logic and system that worked 50 years ago or 80 years ago to what works today, because, you know, like Argentina is the best example of it, right? You had, you know, all the soybean, we're gonna put all these tariffs on China and they're not gonna be able to buy it and we're gonna create a problem. And then China's like, oh, we're just not gonna buy from you. And the United States is like, okay, like you guys, you're gonna have a hard time. And she's like, no, like we're just gonna buy from Argentina. And Argentina is supposed to be like our friend. And Argentina's like, oh shit, China's gonna buy it? Like, cool.
Yeah.
And China's like, we're good.
Javier Milei's like, yeah, we're doing it.
And China's like, we're good. We just filled our need. And just like that, it's like, wait, what happened to the war? Well, it was like really one-sided. It's like, oh no. Trump comes out, he's like, oh no, China's using this as a negotiation tactic. I'm like,
that's the whole point.
Yeah. That's the idea when you declare a trade war against someone. That would you think they're just gonna not do anything and just wait it out because, you know, you're Trump and this is America? Like, no, like there's an entire global economy now.
Well, and I saw yesterday, now he's coming out and saying, I won TikTok for you guys. Mm. This was a part of the trade war, right? Like, I talked with Xi and we got you guys TikTok. But like we all talked about, TikTok does not have freedom of speech. Now it's just controlled by these technocrats. And so we really don't have TikTok back.
But that's only from our perspective, because I think there's a lot of TikTok users that just like TikTok, but they don't care about the freedom of speech as much as we do, right? They want their dancing videos. They want their fun pranks. Those are all allowed. And China, I think, came out with a great deal because they still get most of the revenue from what I understand. It's just that now the editorialization and the content moderation falls to Israeli Zionists. Mm. You know, so China's like, I don't give a shit as long as people are still using it and there's a lot of revenue. So in a sense, he did win TikTok, but he just didn't win it for us.
Well, I think it's really scary because, you know, like, when people criticize how China works and how kind of their censorship works, like, oh yeah, they live in this walled garden and they restrict information from outside world coming in and they just want you to see what they want to see. And we all like criticize that and made fun of that. And like, oh, that's horrible. Like, they don't know what's really going on in the world. Well, we're doing the same exact thing. You know, we're taking control. The United States taking control of the algorithm. They're taking control of what Americans can see. And they're blocking out the ideas from the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And how is that any different than the Great Firewall of China at this point?
It's not.
The same exact thing.
And hasn't that really been happening since 2020 with the pandemic and, you know, restricting speech? And isn't that just I'm just curious your opinion, because that's kind of when you got started in this, right? Is that a concern of yours, the restriction of freedom of speech around the world, what's going on in the UK and around the world and the social media apps and all of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think freedom of speech is the one thing that America did well over other countries. There's no other country in the world where you can just literally say whatever you want. That's what separated America from everybody else.
And specifically being critical of the government.
Correct. That's like not only a right, it's like your duty as an American citizen to criticize the government, to criticize what they're doing, because that's what they listen to. That's what actually makes a difference. That's how you affect the public conversation. And, you know, like I've spent a lot of time with different parts of Congress before, and they literally decide what Americans care about based on the conversation that's going online.
Mm.
They have like these metrics and these reports. Like, okay, this was trending. This is what we should pretend to care about.
Yeah.
But if that itself is being manufactured, then now they're not even thinking about what you care about, because that's how they decide. So you need like this like freedom of ideas, freedom of conversation, of exchange of ideas, because without it, even the leadership, they cannot know. And do they care? They probably don't care, but at least they could pretend to care. But now they're just,
yeah, it seems like they're not really trying. And I don't appreciate that, because the psyops are not very good, right? And now I just read recently something about how there were Chinese spies talking to Tyler Robinson in Discord. I'm like, guys,
James, what are you doing?
it's like so crazy. I'm like not a big Anna Luna Paulina fan at all.
No,
I think she is like, when you have to get a narrative out there, they've literally hired her to go out there and start pumping out the counter narrative.
Right.
Right. Because like, she's literally a stripper. She'll do anything for money. And all of a sudden she's like, oh no, like the Tyler Robinson thing. Oh, it's not Israel. We swear it's China. We're like, what? Where the fuck did that come from?
were they like, oh, the trans thing isn't catching on as well as we like, so maybe let's
switch it.
Seems like the people are kind of liking the foreign intelligence aspect of the story, so maybe we'll inject some of that in there, but a different one.
It's because just... would have to be an idiot to believe this was a lone gunman.
Well, yeah, I've been going pretty hard on that. I don't know if you guys have talked about it. You guys have thrown out all kinds of theories, because I do love you and Peter's peanut gallery situation that you guys got going on every single week. And you guys have thrown some interesting stuff out there. So where are you at in terms of what do you think transpired?
Well, for sure, the government is not telling us the truth.
100%.
I think everyone can agree that at least minimum, the government is not telling us the truth about what happened. Then now you're okay. Were they covering up? Were they hiding? Because if they're not telling us the truth, then they're covering something up.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, logically, that's just the progression that you have to go through. Okay. They're not telling the truth. Where they're covering up. Well, there's so many different options then. You can go in multiple directions. Maybe it was China. You know,
it was Iran.
Yeah. Maybe it was Iran.
Oh, that would be just interesting if they take that turn.
And the reality is, we actually don't know. There's not enough evidence to know for sure what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do know is that when they lie to you and when they cover something up, they can't be mad at you because you're starting to question different narratives, different conspiracy theories, because you're lying to us. You're not telling us the truth. So naturally, like, we're going to start thinking about what if and what are the other possibilities. And the fact that they're telling us, no, you can't think that. You guys are crazy. You're conspiracy. Like, no, like, fuck you. Like, you guys are lying to us.
Well, Cash Patel is going out there saying social media is very dangerous. We got to shut that. Like,
what? And you believe that?
That's crazy.
Yeah. He was like the number one guy.
It's like, you were a podcaster, bro. This is what you did before.
And he ran, you know, on the fact that we need to have freedom of speech. It's ridiculous that the Biden administration is censoring all of us. And now he's just flipped.
He's like, no. They've been telling you the truth the entire time. I'm like, what? You got to be kidding me.
So what? Yeah.
It's like insulting.
Did he see something? Like, he got in there. They showed him some files. We were talking to Jimmy Dore, and he was like, here's what happens when you go into government. This is his bit. And he says, they show you a video of the JFK assassination that nobody's ever seen before. They play the video for you, and they just stop it, and they say, all right, do you have any questions? And then you just, oh, I guess not, because then now you know what actually. So then basically it's a threat mechanism of like, hey, if you cross us, this is what happens to you.
I think when you
like that,
join the administration and these types of agencies, I think it's just, okay, you're a part of the FBI, you're part of the United States government, you're a part of this administration. Your job is to protect us and our role.
Like a fraternity.
Yeah, this is your job. Your job is not to be, you know, like investigate all these crimes. Your job is to make us look better. Are you a team player or are you not? Whose side of this are you on? Because they may frame it as, we're trying to do the best that we can. And if you're going against us, then what are you really doing here? Get in line. Are you a company man or are you not? Because we see this in not only government, but every type of company. You've seen it at even, you know, like pharmaceutical companies, like Pfizer and whatever else. You know, you may have your own ideas, but once you join an organization, your ideas are not your own ideas anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Now your words and your actions reflect the company and the organization that you represent and you work for. So they go in and, okay, this is a narrative. This is what we want people to be thinking. To be fighting, infighting will look, reflect really poorly on the administration, really stop what we're trying to do. Therefore, you have to get in line with us. We need to be one group. And I think that's really what it is. I think it's really basic. I think that they just join an organization and they're just becoming company managers.
But that's a different narrative than before, where they said the deep state is acting independent of the president. They're not regarding, they're more powerful. But then now you're almost saying that they're coming together. right? Because there was during the Biden years, right? There was a lot of criticism of the agencies doing their own thing, the CIA, the FBI, whatever, all these three-letter agencies.
We know Biden wasn't doing anything. Mm.
And so now it seems like, okay, it seems like the FBI is doing what Trump wants them to do. So this is good or bad? So this is, I'm getting, it's really hard to figure out what's better or what's worse. Do you want the FBI kind of going rogue, or do you want the FBI doing what the administration wants them to do?
I mean, from the, I mean, there's two sides to this, right? There is the administration and leadership side, and there's us and the normal ants and peons of society.
Yeah.
Right. And from the administration side, you want everyone to be in line with you because it's efficiency. He's a business guy. He wants everyone to be on company line. And if you're not, then you got to go. If you want to keep your job, we will shame you. We'll publicly shame you, and everyone will call you a joke. You'll probably never get your podcast back, or you fall in line. That's the ideal situation from the top. You don't want dissenters. From our point of view, we're like, I don't fucking care. I just want the truth. But there is a segment of society that says, like, no, actually, I don't care if they're lying to us because I want that side to win no matter what. Therefore, if they're lying to us, if they're gaslighting us, the ends justify the means. I am not an ends justify the means guy. But there are a lot of people, especially in business, especially in politics, that say, well, the ends do justify the means. So maybe we'll lie to you. Maybe we gaslight you. Maybe we steal from you. But there's a greater good. So just deal with it until we get there.
So then what would be the greater good with the Charlie Kirk assassination?
Now we're going to like Zionist territory. Because if you are an organization, because we all know that the Israeli Zionist kind of money, Texas oil money, the evangelical money, the Israel lobby money, that they funded Turning Point, right? That's not in question any longer. No. Everyone knows that to be true. So with the assassination of Charlie Kirk, they had a goal of, we want an X amount of branches and all over the country. They were able to 10X that number in one instant. Now they are in every country, every college campus. So if their goal is expansion and covering America as much as possible, like, they've achieved it.
With his assassination.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not saying that they did it because I don't know.
It's almost like when an artist dies, their art becomes super valuable.
Exactly.
He's more valuable. Turning Point USA is now more valuable that he's gone.
And it's weird because him as a person physically may have passed, but his like image and his words are still alive. So they still get the benefit of having him. You know, we talked about this before, but the idea that they are still tweeting with his account.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's crazy.
It's so weird to me. They're using a dead man's account and pretending, not even pretending, but they're tweeting out as if he were still alive. Like, it hasn't actually missed a beat.
No.
And it's like, wait a second. Was he ever actually tweeting himself?
Well, I think he had, I think Charlie, I don't know. I mean, you probably met him a couple times. I don't know if you have personal relations with him before. But to me, he seemed at least somewhat principled that he believed in the values that he believed. Mm. And he wanted to live by them as much as he could. And that's when now it's not just that Turning Point is bigger than it ever was. It's now that you don't have this person that is as principled, it seems. It seems like everybody in there at the moment seems like an operative and saying, hey, we're going to live by a value of just growing Turning Point without some of the other things that he once stood for, whether it be like religious values or freedom of speech. These kinds of things are now secondary to just let's amass as many chapters or branches as possible.
Yeah, it went from, if Turning Point under Charlie Kirk had been a more mission-focused business where he had a mission he wanted to accomplish and he wanted to put out there and it had some sort of conviction behind it, now it's become this kind of soulless machine, you know, and people are, they're using it, they're leveraging it. And I don't know if that's a good thing. You know, like, we're going into this world and era of kind of taking soul and personality out of movements.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of the first real movement that is now running leaderless. It's just like this mechanism, organism, and everything is AI generated.
Yeah.
And everything is algorithm generated. And it went from something kind of really organic feeling, even though it was funded in a really odd way. It felt organic. Now it feels manufactured.
Mm.
And the fact that people are gravitating towards more, I think it's really indicative of where we're going.
But is it going to work?
Yeah, I think it works.
Do people, because I'm not as deep in that space. So I'm wondering if like the college students are going to be as excited about Turning Point events as they were before. Is the astroturfing as effective as somebody who's seemingly real up there versus somebody, you know, who they're just going to throw out there now as the new Charlie Kirk?
Well, I don't think the goal is to get people overly passionate or believing in something. They just need to move. And it'll be enough to move people, but not enough to make people actually believe and care enough. But they don't want people to have too much conviction. They want to remove conviction from you, but they want to be able to move you, immobilize you. So it does serve their purpose. And it's about mass numbers, not about individual, you know, conviction and passion. So will people be as passionate? Probably not.
You don't need them. Passion is almost a negative.
But as sheer numbers, like they'll achieve their goal because it's a numbers game.
Interesting.
I do think that there was a backlash or something that backfired because of the Charlie Kirk assassination, that whatever entity is behind this, they did not plan. We already knew that funding Israel and the U.S.-Israel relations with under 30-year-olds was unpopular, but now so much information is coming out about that. And you see it on TikTok. You see all these college students, the Charlie Kirk fanboys saying, did you know that every single congressman and woman is funded by, and that is becoming a machine on its own. And now I'm in my 30s. I didn't really even question that for so many years. And my mom in her 50s is like, did you know this about Israel? I feel like there's a shift going on right now that no matter how much money Israel puts into YouTube and TikTok and paying $7,000 to content creators, you can't stop now this movement. And that does have the passion behind it. And I think that's something that was unintended.
Well, I think that's why they're putting out this interesting narrative with Trump over the last week. Like, well, we're going to do this ultimatum. And then people leaked out this, oh yeah, he told Netanyahu to fuck off, you know? And then he came back, oh no, I never said that. But that headline made it out there. So it makes it seem like there's a little pushback. It makes it seem like they're actually listening. But then you take a step back. Well, no, actually, it didn't do anything. But they're combating that by putting that out there, you know? So I think that's a part of it, that they're constantly trying to, play with the narrative, try to win people in. And the saddest reality is that people care now, but give it 6 months.
Mm.
It's like something else to care about.
So where do you
shift to something different?
So, as a person who has quite a bit of influence, what do you see as your responsibility as far as the content that you put out there?
I don't really think about that, to be honest. You know,
interesting. Because like, do you just chase? Because I know you don't do this, but like a lot of people do. They're driven by what is working, like what clicks, what engagement are you getting? Oh, I'm going to do more of this story because I'm getting engagement here. Seems like maybe 6 months from now, people don't care about the Charlie Kirk thing as much, so I'm going to stop talking about it. Does that play a factor in how you choose stories or what you want to talk about in your podcast at all?
It's literally what I'm thinking about at the moment that I decide to record something. So if I was thinking about Charlie Kirk a lot, I think maybe last episode or the episode before, I was sitting with Peter and we're like, we're not going to talk about Charlie Kirk today. You know, like, let's just talk about other things. Like, I think everyone's at the Charlie Kirk assassination fatigue. Let's just move on to something different. And then we turned the cameras and we're like, all right, let's just mention one thing. You know what I mean? Even one thing, because like, did you see, you know, all of a sudden that becomes like 30 minutes. We're like, oh, that means we were not going to do it, but I'm still thinking about it.
Right.
Because other people are talking about it. So I'm like, okay, I kind of want to chime in.
Yeah.
And it just became a huge part of the conversation, but it wasn't our goal. So that's also part of like the algorithm and what I'm being shown manipulating me.
Mm.
Right.
Right, because they can manipulate. That's why there's all these distraction stories. We're going to do this, or now, you know, maybe Iran's going to bomb America, and all of a sudden you're focused on another thing, which I think is, for us as content creators and people who live and die by the algorithm, it definitely channels your focus, or they can channel your focus. And I think they are.
Yeah, I think it's really easy to manipulate content creators and people who talk online. You know, if I want you to talk about a certain topic, when you talk about it, I can just flood your video with bots and engagement. And you'll be like, oh, shit, this is what people care about. This is what I'm going to talk about because people care about this issue. And then you talk about it. And then all of a sudden you talk about something I don't want you to talk about. All I got to do is take away that engagement. You're like, oh, people hate this.
So do you think bots are being used to put good comments? Because I've always associated.
Yeah.
Because for me, it's like when I get dragged, I'm like, those bots. I never think about it with the positive, but that makes a lot of sense.
I think the system is designed to put people in certain lanes and categories, niches, and they will use engagement and bots, et cetera, to kind of help guide you into your niche.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you're there, they're like, okay, this is who you are. We know. I mean, from a business standpoint, this is what makes sense.
Right.
We know exactly what you're going to talk about. We know who your target audience is. We will reward you with giving you your target audience of people that like this type of content. But don't go out of it. It's not because we don't want you to talk about this issue anymore. It's because now you've messed up my spreadsheet. Right?
So
we need you to stay in line because it helps our data.
Yeah.
So from a business standpoint, even if it's not any crazy ulterior motive of them trying to manipulate your ideas, really what they're trying to do is just categorize. This is the fault, and this is what we have to deal with going into this technological world. It's that maybe it's not even the fact that they don't want you talking about this. It's just that it's better for business if they know exactly what you're going to talk about.
And Charlie Kirk was kind of coming out of his box.
They don't like that.
No.
They want you to be one thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a food blogger, don't you dare talk about anything outside of food.
I wish they would have that same principle when it comes to Hollywood actors. Yeah. Just keep acting. I don't want to hear your political views.
You know, but a lot of Hollywood actors, like they're actors and they put up something about their movie and it's got millions of views.
Yeah.
And they make a vlog or a video and then it's got like 10,000 views. They're like, well, you're really famous. Well, it's because you've gone out of your lane.
Mm.
You know, so even them, even the most famous of people, if they try to go outside of their lane, the algorithm naturally, you know.
I mean, part of that, I think, is the audience. Is like, I enjoy your movies, but I don't necessarily want to watch your vlog.
Well, I don't think they get shown it because it's out of their world.
Mm.
Just because you have 10 million followers doesn't mean, you know. Doesn't mean everyone gets to see your stuff. People think, oh, I have a lot of followers, a lot of subscribers, therefore I should have this much reach. But that's not how it works.
No.
You know, the algorithm says, okay, this is what you talk about. This is what the topic of the video is. You're this much percentage of your audience likes this content. This is who we're going to show it to you. And if it does well within that subset, then maybe we'll decide if we'll give you a little more reach. And if it does in a wider group, then we will give you more reach. And if you do better, then we'll give you more reach. And this is really difficult because this is the game, you know?
It is a game.
It doesn't, the system does not reward people who have flexibility, who are willing to change their mind, who are willing to question outside of what the predetermined narrative is. Because from a business algorithmic tech standpoint, that's really annoying.
So it's almost my responsibility, my duty to screw up with the algorithm because put out videos that people wouldn't expect me to put out.
But then the algorithm like, oh, you're being too crazy.
Yeah.
You're not staying in your lane. So we're not going to show you more people.
Mm.
And then you as a content creator, be like, oh, well, like, what's the point of doing this when no one's listening and they're screwing me. And then you go back to what works.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, finally he's back. Now we can give him the content. We can give him the engagement again.
So, wow. That's kind of profound. Then you almost have to build an ecosystem outside of algorithmic,
ideally
boards, right? But
we all have this. There's something in technology called the two-click problem.
Okay.
Convincing someone to click twice. It's the hardest thing to do. They will sit there and watch an episode for an hour, but to get someone to physically click something two times, it's like impossible. The chance of the two-click is like less than 1%.
So when you say the two click, like they click to watch you, but what's the second click?
Yeah, to go somewhere else. Like, hey, go follow me here instead.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, like if you're on TikTok and you're like, hey, I have an Instagram, go follow my Instagram.
Yes.
It's impossible to get people to convert over. They have an Instagram.
Right.
They just don't want to click twice.
You have to capture them in a different way on that platform.
Have to like trigger them in a way. Because to click twice, it's very difficult. It's like, oh, there's a link here. Link in the bio or link this or click this. Dude, people don't
so then it. That's gives a lot of power to somebody like Fuentes, Nick Fuentes, who has been banned from all major social media platforms for the most part. And so he was able to build his audience outside of this algorithmic model and just say, hey, you guys are watching me for me. So whatever I want to talk about, you guys will watch it. Mm. And so I feel like that's why he's gotten so, you know, popular, and he's such a consistent voice, is that he can just choose whatever he wants to talk about because
he's authentic.
He's not controlled by the algorithm, because the algorithm, they never gave it to him.
They never gave it to him, but okay. He's on Rumble now. I like him. He's on Rumble now. And when he streams, everyone says, oh, look how many people are watching the stream. It makes you want to stream more. So if you're a Rumble, what do? You give him more viewers.
So you think the Rumble views are not real?
Yeah.
For sure. I was talking to you about this. And you said it. When you were sending me the nickname, you're like, how many people? I was like, I don't know if those are real.
This was, he took his show off after the Charlie Kirk assassination. And, you know, they didn't get along. So that was like kind of a really big thing for him to do. And then he said, hey, I think we all need to take a day. And so when he came back, his numbers were astronomical. I felt they were real. James did not.
I think it's a combination of both.
Yeah.
I think there are real interest to people, but
sure, there's some people in there. It's not nobody, but
yeah, it's not nobody. It's not all fake.
Yeah.
But if you're a Rumble or you're a technology or you're a social media platform, and you know that there's going to be an event where you can have the opportunity to capture new users, and the easiest way to capture new users is make it seem like your platform is a place to be right now. You don't let Nick Fuentes go up with 50,000 people. It doesn't grab a headline.
Right.
But if it's 100,000 people and you juice it with another few hundred thousand, all of a sudden it was like, oh, look how many people went. And now that narrative, it's propaganda. That narrative is what drives more people. So if you're Rumble, that's the move to make, actually. You know, for them to not do it would be crazy.
Right.
Because they're investing in these people. You know, they're investing in their creators to bring them to their platform. Then you want them to, you want it to look like they moved to your platform because they moved to your
platform. Well, that differentiates Rumble, right? Because YouTube won't do it. Instagram won't do it. X won't do it. So Rumble has Nick Fuentes.
Yeah, they have Nick Fuentes. And look how many people are watching him.
Yeah.
Rumble is a place to be.
Yeah.
From a business standpoint, it makes a ton of sense.
Totally.
But it's not that real.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think with the Rumble, I think you still need to have non-political content. That's what makes a platform. That's why TikTok was so powerful. And that's why I would say the Zionists really wanted it to control it, is because you get the normal content and all of a sudden you slide in something that's, you know, babies getting blown up in Gaza. And they're like, what the hell just happened here? And so that is something that a normal person wouldn't otherwise see. Because I think somebody who's chronically online, let's say on X, they already know all that stuff. X isn't that. I would say the stuff that you talk about X and you go on the street and you're like, hey, did you hear about this today? 9 out of 10 or even more would say, I don't even know. I haven't heard of that. So I think X is a completely different ecosystem versus a TikTok, where there actually are trends that are happening that are reflective of what's going on in reality. And that's why they needed it. And so with Rumble, it's like, as long as, if you don't have any like cooking show, you don't have any prank shows going on there, it's not, people aren't going there, really. It's not an organic platform. But once you start having normie content being made, that's when I think you've made it.
I think that's why I think Instagram is most interesting, because
the OG.
Yeah, well, Instagram is the one platform you go where you mix like your political content with the content that you actually care about in real life. So if I watch like a health blogger or fitness thing, or watch food, or my cousin's baby pictures, or my sister had, you know, a new dog, or, you know, their kid did, you know, got a trophy, whatever. You get to mix all of that in one place. And that makes you relate to the content more, because that's where you get your real content mixed with your other content. But on TikTok, you only get the stuff that you you're interested in at that time. Because you've noticed how fast your TikTok algorithm can change.
Yeah.
If you're watching one type of content and somehow you shift to another, you don't see that previous content anymore.
Yeah.
That's like completely out of your algorithm. You only see the new stuff. And then they kind of move you into another one and another one, another one, you know? So Instagram kind of is the one where if you follow someone, you have more highly likely chance of seeing them. You know, on X, if you go through your X feed, think of how many people are on X. You only see content from the, 30 people.
That's right.
You don't have to follow them. But once you start seeing certain people and you start looking at it or reading it, you just see those same people over and over again because they just put people into these categories and boxes. So you don't really expand out of it.
Although what I don't like about X is the number of, I think, accounts that I don't really know who you are other than when you post. Like, is this dude like a real dude? Or are you, you know, some guy in Pakistan or Malaysia? Like, are you a journalist? Are you just engagement farming? It seems like it's hard to tell because it's more or less text-based or people post videos, but there's very few people who do like monologues on X.
Yeah, and then you have kind of the larger media companies that run maybe 15 or 20 different large X accounts, and they all kind of say the similar thing, but you don't know they're the same company. So you see it five times, you're like, oh, this is true. I saw it five times, but you don't realize that it was the same company and same person that was giving it to you five times. And it's really hard to decide then, like, what's real, what's not. You know, when Elon bought X and he's like, oh, we're going to make this freedom of speech and this platform where everyone can debate their ideas and the best idea wins. I love that idea, this idea of the digital town square. But it's not that, you know, it's more like this. X is the front lines for propaganda war. It is one person's ideas versus another person's ideas. And how do you manipulate the system best so that your propaganda beats the other side's propaganda?
Yeah.
It's complete PSYOP versus PSYOP. That's the whole point of X. You know?
Interesting.
So, go ahead.
I was going to say, you compared the TPUSA movement now to kind of a soulless machine. And on the topic of technology and AI, you kind of get that feeling that that is what this movement is. We're kind of moving into this dystopian movement. As a Christian, you know, you have people talk about the mark of the beast, right? They're going to chip you. It's going to be, you know, it says in the Bible, it's going to be your right hand or your forehead. You see what's going on with the digital IDs in the UK. Does it kind of feel to you like we might be moving into this revelations time?
I used to be really heavy into eschatology. Like, how is the world going to end? And Revelations and Daniel. And, you know, like, it feels like it's coming. And I think for months, even like up to like a year ago, that's all I thought about, this end of the world. You know, something's wrong here. I can see all the signs. I can figure it out. And I came to like recently, I think maybe just a month ago, I came into this like really honest kind of realization. Because in the Bible, in Matthew, it says, you will not know the time or the hour, the day or the hour. And I'm like, here I am living in this 3D world, like really in the greater scheme of like the universe and the world and God. Like, I'm so insignificant. And here I am thinking that I figured it out, which is like so ridiculous of me, actually, to think about it. You know, I have no idea. Can we notice patterns? Maybe. But we see so little bit of like the huge picture that it is, that it may seem like it is, but we have no context of that. And I went from, oh, dude, like, this is all the mark of the beast, we're fucked. And
yeah, I've been there.
Yeah, I was totally in that lane. But recently I was like, dude, you have no idea. There's no way for us to know. And to think that with our small brains and our limited world and historical and time view, to think that we have an inkling of what's really going on, it's like overly proud. And I'm trying not to be this guy that's like, okay, I figured it out. Like, no, like, that's ridiculous. Do you know how many people in the history of the last 2,000 years thought they figured it out just to be wrong? You know, to not figure it out, you're actually more right.
But with this AI frontier, does it feel like we're going to be using it for good, or does it scare you a little bit?
Oh, it scares the shit out of me. I think, you know, I've read the Ted Kaczynski Manifesto like a million times, right? Because he warned of all the things that were going to happen on the internet and society because of this kind of embracing of technology. And he wasn't wrong pretty much about anything. Maybe the killing random people, maybe we could have done without.
Right? Understatement, but yeah.
Yeah. But they make it sound like he killed like a fuck ton of people. But it was like a handful of people over a very long period of time. Not good at the same time. Overblown. But he was not wrong in his ideas. And there are a lot of people right now kind of like, hey, warning signs, this AI thing, it's not going to be good. We should really think about it. But because it's going to take away our ability for critical thought. Mm. It's going to take our ability to make decisions. We're going to start outsourcing decisions to AI, which we see already. We're going to start outsourcing creativity to AI, which is really dangerous because AI will do people's thumbnails even, right? And we'll do people's music. And like those are the things that make us human. And we're starting giving it to machine. And we're doing it so willingly and easily that it's a really bad precedent of how it's going to go in the future. I think that the problem is that the argument on one side is that if you slow down AI innovation, then we're going to lose the AI war.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes sense. But what does that even mean? What does it mean to lose the AI war, actually?
Probably your economy is not as competitive as somebody who, or another country that has optimized AI for maximum efficiency, production, all these things.
But so what?
So as the, I guess, the most powerful country in the world, still, you want to stay on top. As for another country, for example, I don't know, Italy, let's say. They don't really care about the AI war because it doesn't really affect their economy. It's not built around it. But for the US, they want to maintain this power, this
hegemony. But why?
To control the people.
To control the world.
It's actually not in the ant's best interest to be number one in AI. It's the government's best interest to be number one in AI, because then they have you locked and loaded into a system, and they're going to be able to watch every move that you make, every purchase you make, everywhere you go, everything that you buy, just like the algorithms that we're talking about. And they can kind of steer you to do what they want you to do.
But even then, if you lose the AI war and someone else develops it first, the way technology is that someone else develops it, the US will eventually get it too.
Mm-hmm.
They don't actually lose the ability to control it. They'll still have the ability to control. What they lose is the ability to make money first.
Because you could argue China was never the first to any of this technology.
Yeah.
They've been able to really harness it, make it better.
And they did just fine. Just being second to it. This is like, we have to win because we're going to lose the war. No, we have to win because we may not be the one that makes the most amount of money on it. That's the only difference.
Or is that even
first or second?
Is that even true, though? Because in business school, okay, one thing that we did learn that I still remember is that they told us the first mover advantage is not real.
Mm.
It's actually, you need to make the better product. Because then they always use the example, let's say Yahoo versus Google. Mm. Yahoo was first, but Google did it better.
Mm.
So Google won. And so you can make the argument that it's not even critical. So then that leads to the next question that I would have is, why are they so focused on the AI?
Well,
is it more than maybe just making money? Is it about a control thing? Is it about surveillance? Are there other motivations beyond money in terms of why they are pushing this AI so hard?
Well, right now, the idea is the economy is doing well because the stock market is doing well, right? That's how people and the government decides. It doesn't matter if you're doing well. It doesn't matter if things are cheaper for you. Is the stock market doing well? If the stock market is doing well, then we are all doing well. Shut up. I don't care that you don't think so. The stock market is doing good.
Yeah.
Right? That's the indicator of whether or not we have a healthy economy. Doesn't matter anything about how you live, only the stock market. Well, the stock market is propped up by these crazy valuations of AI companies. If AI and US AI doesn't get there first, then you don't justify the really ridiculously high valuations of all these companies, and the stock market goes down. Then all of a sudden, you can't say this: the economy is doing well.
Mm.
Because if you develop a certain AI technology in other country and not here, the government's just going to take it or buy it or copy it, just like China does, right? They're just going to recreate the same exact thing, because the way technology works is not, if someone else does it, you can always just copy it and redo it. Coming up with the idea the first time is the expensive part. So we spend all this money trying to do it first, but if someone else eventually just does it, they're going to take it anyway. So if they want to build in control mechanisms, if they want to surveil the population, which they do want to, they could do it with someone else inventing it. They actually don't need to invent it first. Mm. The reason to invent it first is just pure greed. That's what I think.
And so how do you get balance, right? Balance is so important in all things. And we grew up in the last generation where, like, I was playing, you know, football, flag football on the streets after school. We weren't going inside scrolling on our iPads. So I feel like raising children in this new time is going to be very challenging because, of course, you want them to be the best at the time, you know, at the technology and the time. But then you also kind of want to, like, move them out to a farm and teach them how to milk a cow, right? Because it's like you don't want to lose that human experience. So what do you think the balance, how do you strike that balance?
Well, for me, at least, my daughter's 3 years old. She watches almost zero TV. She's probably one of the outliers amongst kind of the friend group or the network. She's the only one that doesn't watch an iPad. She doesn't watch her phone. The only phone time she ever gets is if we go to the zoo and we take pictures and videos together. She gets to watch the videos of us at the zoo together.
Yeah.
It's kind of like helps log our memory, remember things that how they happened. But she's not allowed screen time. Mm-hmm. Only time she'll be allowed screen time is for flying. We flew to Mexico to go to Cancun as a family vacation. And she was on the plane and it was like a long flight. And I was like, all right, you can watch some cartoons. A really long flight. Yeah. Like, all right, I give up here.
Yeah.
But outside of that, it's like books, puzzles, play outside. We do a lot of spending time going to see animals. Really a lot of talking, speaking, logic games. I give her puzzles and she'll get one puzzle and she gets to like play with it. And then I'll remove one piece without her knowing. And then she kind of just sits there and figures it out. So I'm always constantly trying to work her mind, problem solve, think outside the box. I think that's actually the most important thing. Because even though she doesn't have a phone, she doesn't have access to the technology, she doesn't have access to the iPad, like all of her kind of peers in her age group do. When she has my phone, she knows how to open it. She knows how to zoom in. She knows how to zoom out. She knows how to scroll. Technology is so intuitive that a three-year-old can figure out without even having regular access to it.
Wow.
So why do you have to give it more to them? You don't have to. They're going to figure it out eventually. You know, so I remove all the technology as much as possible. And it's just all the things that I think are more human that will help them critically think, help them kind of see the world for the way it's supposed to be. And then eventually the rest of the technology stuff, you can't block that out of their lives forever. It's going to get into their lives no matter what anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so
it's good to set a foundation outside of that. So she at least knows another reality.
Yeah.
Because when, you know, you describe this stuff, it sounds really scary. And so I'm almost thinking, because they always tell us, like, the U.S., we have all these enemies, like, the threats are coming from different types of people. But I almost think at this point, maybe the biggest threat is technology. I don't know if you would agree. Like, what do you think is the biggest threat?
Yeah, I think humanity? How to navigate this new future that we're going into.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is, I mean, the difference between now and 20 years ago. It's nothing compared to the difference between today and 20 years later. The change that we'll have in society for the next 20 years, it's going to be exponential to what we've experienced. I mean, 20 years ago, we were using like paper maps.
Yeah. Yeah.
We would like go to MapQuest, print them out, and they're like, all right.
Turn by turn directions. Yes.
Yeah. So I got my turn by turn instructions. I don't have to use my atlas anymore.
So true.
But somehow we've all adapted and now I can't go the town over without my GPS on.
Yeah.
We've lost our ability for natural. I mean, to go a mile, I'm using my GPS now.
Yeah.
That's just been taken away. Remember when you were younger, they would do these math tests and they say, okay, you can't use your calculator. You have to show your work.
Mm.
Well, now calculators have replaced actual doing math. AI will replace your ability to do certain things like logic, because AI does logic very well, actually better than most humans.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're losing that ability. Like, why would you do it yourself when technology can do it better than I can? And slowly we're removing all these small things that make us human. And that's the scariest part of it, is that we're going to lose our humanity.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing if you believe that AGI will take over the world. I actually don't think so. I don't think we're even close to this whole AGI thing. I think the whole promoting AGI is just there to make it seem like AI is advancing so fast to justify, again, huge valuations. I think where we are now is enough to change society, which is that people just rely on it to do their basic things in life.
So then is there a different path? It seems like we're on a freight train and it doesn't seem like there's a point where you can just like get off the train and say, I don't want to be a part of this experiment. Is there something that could potentially happen where we switch course and maybe go back to some of the things that made us human? We're done. It's done.
Well, you got to be on the train and then get the conductor out.
Yeah, the direction we're going is the direction we're going.
Yeah.
There's like nothing we can do to stop that at this point. I think we see that now. If anything had a potential to be stopped, we would have seen at least some sort of pushback from this administration. Like, hey, this AI thing, this dystopian future thing, maybe we should pause a little bit because it's not actually good for humanity and for society and for American people. We should at least reconsider this. They would have at least attempted or pretended to say that. But no, the first day of inauguration, like, hey, here are my AI guys. We're going. Like, yeah. Oh, fuck. We're really fucked. This is it. There's no turning back. The same people that were in charge for 2020, 2024, which are the technologists, they're the same people that are in charge now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well, with the Palantir, Peter. So, like, looking forward to, let's say, 2028.
Mm.
Do you still see yourself supporting this, the continuation of this administration? Because I imagine J.D. Vance is going to be next in line.
Mm.
Do you see yourself on that train, or do you, from a political perspective, where are you at with that?
I think politics is fake and gay. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter who's in charge. Mm. The direction that society is going is going to go regardless of.
Yeah, I agree. Mm.
And if anything, they're just pandering to one side or the other. And it creates this kind of societal political balance where, okay, both sides gets to win. But while people are doing the both sides gets to win thing, technology is going the direction that's going to go. It doesn't actually matter.
So the technology is going. I mean, maybe then we just fight about the culture stuff.
Yeah, culture stuff. But really, culture is an internal, like between you and your family, your neighbors thing. It's not a global or a national thing. Because they make it sound like it. But again, you know, when they were canceling Netflix and they're like, oh, you know, like they're showing trans stuff to my kids. I'm like, no, they're not forcing your kids to watch trans stuff. You're allowing your kids to watch trans stuff.
Mm.
It's your job as a parent to monitor what your kids are watching.
Just like the screen time.
Yeah, it's your job. It's not the government's job. It's not the platform's job. They're going to put out whatever people are going to watch. They're a business.
Right, because nobody watches it. They're not going to do that.
They're just not going to do it. You are allowing your kids to watch it because they're your kids. You have full control of what they're doing. And you're allowing your kids to watch it. So don't blame Netflix. Don't blame the government. That's such a cop-out for shit parenting. Be a good parent. You know, like, there's no way in hell I would just, you know, even if my daughter was 5 or 6 or 7, like, here's my iPad. You know, here's Netflix. Have fun.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy in this day and age. You have to know exactly what they're watching. If you really want to be proactive, you need to watch what they're about to watch before they watch it. You need to pre-screen.
So then how do you navigate school? Because you can't go in and sit in the classroom before your daughter does.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of people that feel that public schools are indoctrinating their kids. And, you know, they have no control over it. In California, it's a really big issue because they're saying now, even with vaccines, that they could send somebody in to the classroom and vaccinate your kids without your consent. How do you navigate school, private school, public school, homeschool?
Well, I think the most important thing that you have to instill into your child and indoctrinate into your child is that you have final say over school, over institutions, over authority, that you are actually the final authority in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nothing else matters. What I say is the way, and hopefully I'm right. But the chance of a school being right is probably at best just as equal to my ability to be right. Right? Like, no one's perfect. School's gonna mess up, you're gonna mess up.
Yeah.
So like, it should be me that messes up, not the school. We need to get away from this idea that government school is going to raise your kids.
Yeah.
Because most people send their kids to school because they don't want to raise them. They don't want to spend the time. It's annoying. Mm. It's a lot of time. I spend about 3 to 4 hours with my kid every day, no matter what. And when I say I spend time with my daughter, it's not just being in the same room. Because a lot of parents will say, oh, yeah, I spent time with my kid. But the kid's doing its own thing and like they're on their phone.
Right.
That's not spending time with your kid. That's just being in the same room. You have to actually be attentive, be active for 3 or 4 hours every day. And I think that's really different than what we thought. I mean, there was this generation that said, no, like you just got to teach them right and wrong and like meritocracy and they just have to work hard. Well, meritocracy is like the biggest lie I've ever sold. We can get back to that. And then we ran into this thing where the liberals were like, no, like you have to like engage with your kids and you have to be a parent and you have to like give them the participation trophies. And that's not right either.
Yeah. No.
Right? The actual answer is that you have to do a little bit of both. Is that you have to tell them right and wrong. You have to teach them to work hard. But you can't just tell them. You got to do it. You have to show them because kids mimic. That's how they learn. You can tell them a million things all you want. This is what you're supposed to, what you're supposed to. But if you yourself don't do it, then the kids are never going to do it. They're like, well, yeah, but you don't do it. So you have to live that way. But at the same time, you have to be attentive to your time. So if you're a father and I don't have, 4 hours a day to spend with my kid, well, you have an hour too. Because I know you watch Netflix. I know you watch football.
Right.
I know
you always make time, right?
I know you go to the bar. Being a parent is selfless sacrifice. I mean that if it means you have to like, no, but I'm really stressed out and I need to like release my stress. Well, that's what your family is for. Spend time with your kid, And I think a lot of people, we have so many things that we can go to that may seem more fun and we choose to do those things. But the reality is if you get to know your kid and you spend time, like it's the most fun. You just have to develop that relationship and you have to teach them. And it's not just a matter of, like, how do I make sure that they're entertained or how do I make sure that I'm occupying their time? It's like, no, like, if you don't do it, no one else will. Mm-hmm. The government school that you're trusting, they're going to fuck your kid over. These institutions that you're trusting, they don't have your kid's best interest in mind. Actually, no one has your best kid's interest in mind. So if you're not the one that does it, like, you're screwed.
So, okay, so I completely agree with all that. And I think the pushback from some people would say, once again, that all makes sense. But what happens in a situation where both parents are working multiple jobs, like a lot of people in this country are required to in order to survive? And also then now you have kids, you almost have no choice but to rely on some of these services, like going to public school to educate your kids. So then what do we do as a society to reform that? Does it need to be reformed? Is it still on the parents to say, hey, not my problem, you work two jobs, try to find one job that pays you better?
I mean, that's
what do you do there?
That's the hard part about society, right? That sometimes you don't have options. But just because you have no options, just because it's difficult, it doesn't negate or remove the responsibility that you have as a parent. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I gotta work two jobs, I gotta work three jobs, I gotta four jobs. Yeah, I'm sorry, that sucks. Life isn't fair. But just because your life isn't fair doesn't mean the kid raised himself. It doesn't take that part away. But it's so easy to say, well, I have to do all these things because I need to move forward inside. Yes, I agree. But what are you going to do about your kid then? You're going to sacrifice your kid for that? And you can't get that time back. And that's the real hardest part about being a parent is, well, especially if you're a dad, it's like, well, I got to do all these things. Yeah, life is suffering. Life is not easy. If you're a man, your life is suffering. No one said it's supposed to be easy, And all this social media, all this entertainment, everything that we're flooded with our eyes makes it seem like you're supposed to have a good life. But that's not true. Mm-mm. No one said actually that your life is supposed to be easy. Spending time with your kids, it's like the minimum requirement of being a father and a parent. And you have to do it. There's no guy I've ever met that's over 50 years old that goes, man, I wish I would have spent less time with my kid. Never happened.
Right?
0%.
It's like that TED Talk years ago where they went to nursing homes. I don't know if I'm sure everybody's seen this. And they asked people in their 90s or on their deathbed, you know, what would they have done differently? And nobody says, I wish I would have worked more. Mm. I wish I would have spent less time with family. Even to the point where people say, you know what? I wish I would have gone back and gone to less of these work social events where I'm having small talk with people that don't even matter. It was a waste of my time, right? I wish I would have spent more time with my family, more time with my loved ones. That's what really matters at the end of your life. And so that's kind of what you're saying, right? Is, you know, that time is more valuable than anything. But I was going to say, you're an entrepreneur, right? You've owned all these businesses. You've done all these things. I think you even have a business now with a VPN. And it's, which I want to talk about because it sounds like the most valuable thing to protect all your information based on everything out there. But it sounds like out of everything you've done, and correct me if I'm wrong, being a parent has been the most fulfilling. Would you agree with that?
It's the absolute best thing. You know, as soon as I came in and we met, I was like, we were treating like kid stories.
Yeah.
Look at my daughter. Because,
yeah,
you know, before I had a kid, I was like, oh, fucking loser. This guy's like showing his kid pictures. I don't want to see your dumb kid pics. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't want to see him. Don't tell me. I didn't have a kid. I didn't get it. It never related. And now I'm that annoying guy.
Now you're wearing a picture of her on your shirt. Yeah. You're like, hey.
I got this t-shirt. I go, my dad, number one dad. I'm so proud about it. You know, I had a kid later in life, and I think that's probably the biggest blessing actually I've ever had. Because if I had a kid young, I don't think I would have been as attentive. There's like other things in life I would have wanted to do. I think I was really fortunate, and not intentional, but I think I was fortunate that I had my kid when I did, because I appreciated that much more. To have kind of the struggle to get there, I appreciated that much more. And because I appreciate it more, like, that's all I want to do, you know? Like, as soon as we finish, I'm going to go and I'm going to FaceTime my wife so I can see my daughter. You know?
Yeah.
It's just what becomes everything you do. And when I speak, when I go out or I think about things, I'm like, okay, is this going to be better for my daughter and her future or not?
So is that what really drives you and what you talk about and what you stand for? Is
100%.
It's about her future now.
100%.
So, okay. So that's a great segue. Cause I wanted to ask you, like, broadly speaking, right. People paint you as a conservative, quote unquote, and there are certain values that come with that. So I think a lot of times those monikers don't really mean as much anymore. It's all a jumbled mess. So like for you, what are those values that you try to instill in your daughter? Like, what are the most important things that are North Stars for you?
I think it really is kind of the hierarchy of how life works. So it's God, family, country. And I think it has to be in that order.
Yeah, it has to be.
And the conservative movement right now, it's like, well, country, then God. Business.
Interesting. Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like country, you know, business.
I would say business then, above country sometimes.
And then maybe God and family somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that kind of hierarchy is wrong and flawed. And I think that's where the conservative movement is going, which I find extremely concerning.
It's like that original food pyramid that we got, where it had bread, and now we're, it's actually flipped.
Yeah, maybe it's actually the other way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But God at the top.
Yeah, I think it has to be because, you know, especially as the world gets really crazy, we get flooded with all these different ideas. You know, like, I'm willing to go into any conspiracy theory out there, as far right or as far left or as crazy as it seems. I have this ability to like at least consider what if. But once you start going down too many conspiracy theories, it's easy to actually get lost. Could you forget what's real?
Yeah.
And I think for me, at least, like having my belief in Christianity and having belief in the Bible, it gives me something to center back to.
Yeah.
It's without it, I think I'd be totally lost. I almost need it because I go like, okay, like there's lizard people, you know, or like, oh yeah, no, the aliens are like programming us or we live in a simulation.
Oh,
like, okay. I mean, all of it's possibly true.
Yeah.
But it's really easy to go like too far where you lose sight of what you actually believe. So having that cornerstone and kind of center belief, it always gives me a way to find home.
Yeah, that is your North Star.
Yeah.
And I guess, so for somebody who's not very religious at all, I think everybody needs that kind of
yeah,
foundation, whether it be, you know, because there's different types of religions with different scripture. So the important part is finding what's true for you, almost, right? In a sense, to keep you in guardrails. Like you said, you can go off in all kinds of different corners. So you need something that's like, hey, I can always go back to this. This is my center. But the center could be somewhat different for everybody.
Well, yes and no. Yes is that I believe people do need some sort of center. But because I believe what I believe, I'm going to think that everyone else's center is wrong. Yeah. Otherwise, I don't actually believe what I believe, right?
Yeah.
Only way I can actually, if I say that there's only one truth in the world, and my truth is that the Bible is real, then if someone says, well, no, that's my truth, and that's my center, well, I don't agree.
Interesting.
I can't agree because my belief, my only true belief is that the Bible is real. Then therefore, how can I accept that your center is different and it works? Because otherwise, then I'm basically saying my center is not real any longer.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I live through one truth, is that the Bible is real and everything else is kind of gray.
That's interesting, because then how do we square that with a secular country, which technically the United States is a secular country.
Well,
it's written in the Constitution, freedom of religion, right?
Yeah.
You have the right to choose what you want to believe versus another country, you know, like a Muslim fundamentalist country. It's like, no, this is our truth. Everybody must follow this.
I think,
how does that work?
I think a problem with a lot of Christians and Christian movement is, so in the Bible, there's something called the Great Commission. Jesus says, go out into the world, make disciples of people and teach them. It doesn't say indoctrinate them. It doesn't say coerce them. It doesn't say force them. It says teach them. That's the Great Commission, to go teach. And that's what we're supposed to do. Not convince people, just teach. And if they don't listen, they don't listen. That's what it says in the Bible to do. But somehow we're in this world where Christians are like, no, like you have to believe this. I'm like, no, like you have the freedom to believe whatever you want. I will tell you what I believe. And if you're interested, I will teach you what I believe. But I have no position nor duty to force you to believe what I believe. I think people have their own right to choose what they want. I also have the right to believe that I don't agree with you.
Yeah.
But you have every right to believe that. And my job is just to make sure that I'm available to teach it, not to force it. And I think that's maybe the separation, that you get into certain religions or certain religious groups where they're like, almost like, oh, if you don't believe what we say, then you're bad. Well, we were never taught to actually do that. You know, that's not our jobs or our role or our calling.
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. I mean, you should almost be at the forefront of the Christian movement. Because,
thank you, Charlie Kirk.
Right?
Listen in.
Because to your point, right, that's something that has always been kind of associated with Christianity, is the kind of coercion that if you don't believe in this, you're a bad person. Or, well, even by force, right? There are many wars fought over this kind of thing.
Which I adamantly disagree with.
Well, yeah, because in the Bible it says only God should judge.
Yeah.
So it's not our responsibility to judge anybody. Mm. That's God's rule.
Yeah.
God's law.
I judge no people. Like you, I could not agree. I could think what you live and your lifestyle is absolutely degenerate and I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
But that's your decision.
That's
your free will. You can do as you please and God will judge you. There's no reason for me to judge you. God will judge you.
Yeah. There's no reason for me to judge you. But sometimes I'm like, oh, I don't know what you're doing.
Well, judging is also very different.
Hey, bro, you really need to wear that dress?
Bitch, that doesn't look good, no.
But I think you should have a freedom. I mean, maybe this is me, hot take, but I think you should have the freedom to judge, because that's you processing information and say, hey, how do I feel about something? How do I feel about you wearing this? How do I feel about you taking this action? But then there's another step to go, I forbid you from doing this. I think that's another, maybe a step too far.
Yeah, I think even the word judge is, it's a little interesting. You know, for me to have an opinion on something and like not agree, it's different than like being overly judgmental of something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I may not agree. And we're all sinners. We all do it.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be with my wife, my daughter, and maybe we're at some mall. And we see like a trans couple walking around. I'm like, you know?
Yeah.
And my wife would be like, hey, like turn our daughter's head. Like, I don't want her to see that.
Yeah.
And we're kind of being judgmental.
Yeah.
But did you not even know that's a trans person?
I don't know.
Yeah, right?
Well,
they're doing a good job. You're not supposed to be able to know.
I don't want to expose them to it. And let's be real. The ones that are out there, it's obvious.
Because you're, are you talking about cross dressers or actual, like, you know,
the ones in Georgia at least, maybe the ones in LA, like, fit in better,
yeah,
and maybe the men, women are like more effeminate, but in Georgia, the trans ones are like 6'3" and butch and like men, but they're wearing dresses.
Yeah.
So that's like more the, so it's a little obvious. You know, again, in LA, they probably fit in better. Maybe you don't know. Maybe it's more like Thailandish here.
Or everybody, looks weird.
A lot of lady boys.
No, you don't have to know. Like LA's, I think the style of clothing is just weird to begin with, especially in some community. Like if you go to West Hollywood or, you know, Pico, whatever those hip areas, like they already look sort of odd. So like, I think it's, there's not that much of like a gap between, you know, what's somebody looking normal versus somebody who's more, you know, out there.
In Georgia, they stick out really.
Know what I mean? I imagine.
Yeah.
Because you don't even, I don't want to give away where you live, but it's like in the suburbs, right?
Yeah.
So yeah.
But in the city, in Atlanta, it's pretty similar to LA, like a big city. Or different.
I don't know.
Atlanta's number one, Atlanta's really dark, meaning it's like majority Black people.
Oh.
So the Black community hasn't really embraced the whole trans thing. It's not really big.
Yeah.
And the Black trans are born in LA.
Yeah, why is that?
Areas?
Why is that a white thing?
I think also because of Christianity, right? The Black community are typically Christians.
Yeah.
And so they are definitely like your pyramid, God, family, country.
Yeah.
And so, or work, if you replace one of the two. So,
or is it a socioeconomic thing where you have all your finances figured out? You're like kind of bored. You're like, okay, what else is out there?
I
don't know. You know, I think if you're working in a factory, you're not going, you know,
I think the
consuming trans, the same stuff.
I think the trans movement is really indicative of kind of this attention, clicks and views economy we live in. Because especially for white people, there's so many white people in the country and so many people want to be famous online or be noticed and everyone kind of blends the same. And people say Asian people look the same to me, like all white people look the same. Like all kind of merges into one. They feel that too. So how do you stand out? And then you start getting a little crazy and you dye your hair blue not because you're overly crazy, but because you want to be noticed. Because that's really at the heart of most people. They just want to feel seen. They want to feel heard.
It's interesting because it used to be rare to see tattoos or blue hair or whatever. Now I was thinking about this the other day. Now I almost feel like if you don't have a tattoo and you don't have piercings, all that, now it's like that's more abnormal because it's become so mainstream. Like if you look at the Gen Zers, everybody has a tattoo.
I was talking to somebody recently about tattoos, and I think the person was saying, because he's a surfer dude and a lot of surfers have tattoos, but he doesn't have a single tattoo. And he was saying a lot of people now, the young people, rely on tattoos as part of their personality to show, you know, who they are. They almost use it as a crutch for having no personality. They say, okay, all of a sudden I have a sleeve tattoo. Because like sleeve tattoos, I think used to mean something. It's like you're a part of some group or gang. I don't really know. But it used to be almost functional as well as like stylistically a thing. But the trans thing, I have looked into this a little bit. And I think it actually comes maybe from the nonprofit industrial complex where you had all these nonprofit organizations fighting for gay rights. And after you achieve gay rights, you need to do something else or you're going to fold away. So then they lash onto another cause that they say, okay, this is the next thing that we're going to fight for. And so we're going to pour all our money and energy into this. We're going to raise money. We're going to convince people that this is a really important topic and that this needs to be addressed. And this is how we can keep our organization going.
Yeah, I think they look for kind of one movement or one social idea, and then that's their business. They actually don't even care what that issue is.
Right.
This is an opportunity, and we live in a society where you're rewarded by making more money. It's like, okay, hey, let's push this. I actually don't care what it does for society, because that's how most businesses run. Technology companies, they don't care the social effect of their technology. Their goal is just to be as big as possible. Pharmaceutical companies, they don't care about the well-being of their patients. They just need the company to be as big as possible. If you're a nonprofit organization that funds social movements, you don't care that this social movement is bad for society. You just need your nonprofit to continue to make money because that's how you eat. So I think it's this kind of desire for constant growth, power, greed, that fuels all of this. If you took away a lot of that kind of spirit of greed in this world, then a lot of these programs that you don't agree with, there's no reason to fund them anymore.
But this brings me back to your VPN, because this is actually different. Mm. Your business is actually for the people and for protection, right? Because you have a unique VPN that nobody can get your information from what I understand. And that is something today with the conversation that we just had, and, you know, we're moving into this dystopian technology era, your information should be the most protected thing. And that's a right. That's a freedom to have.
Yeah.
And so tell me about how you got, you know, in on starting this, inventing this, and all. I want to hear all about it.
So first off, couple of things. Number one, I didn't invent anything.
Okay.
There's a great team of guys that really understand technology, code, that are real advocates of privacy, have been privacy for a long time. They put it together. I got fortunate that they let me in and join them and help them out in the launch in the beginning, help them get to launch. I'm no longer involved in kind of the day-to-day or anything regarding the business anymore, because the team is built, the system is launched, and I get to go back to what I enjoy to do, which is talk shit on the internet. And the reality is, if you have a big business that you're trying to grow, a technology company, having someone that represents a company that is like overly controversial online, not ideal. Probably not best for business.
That's the
reality of it. So quick disclaimer. But what the whole premise of why it was created is because, you know, it's this idea of privacy is your right to choose what information you share, not the privilege to keep what they allow. So all your information, everything about you, all your conversations, it actually belongs to you. No one should have the right to take that from you because it's private. Privacy is freedom. But we live in this world now where they take all of your information and then they arbitrarily decide what you're allowed to keep. It's actually completely turned over. If I have a conversation, we have a conversation, we decide not to post it, no one has the ability to force us to post it. But now they just take it from you. I mean, our phones are listening to us.
Yeah.
The cameras, they're not even connected to Wi-Fi. Who knows, you know?
Yeah.
Who knows if this place is bugged, that we have a security camera right there. Right? Nothing is no longer private. And you need privacy in order to live your life the way that it was supposed to be. It's what keeps you human.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this huge push to, as we talk about AI and digitization of the world, to take away your humanity, and privacy is kind of the core of it. So when we're thinking about VPNs, and Andrew, who is, you know, the founder and the guy running the company now, Andrew Lee, you know, what we found out, because he used to own and run a company called Private Internet Access. Private Internet Access is one of the largest VPNs in the world. And what he told me was, look, just because they say that they don't know your information or they don't save information, there's one huge reality, is that regardless of their intent, the VPN providers know everything you're doing online.
Mm.
Do all of them know? Because that's one question.
Every single VPN.
That people out there are saying that your thing is not that unique.
Mm.
So like, I do want you to get into some of the technology and stuff to explain what's different about your VPN versus some of the other VPNs that out there that's claiming, hey, we have no logs, we have nothing.
So when you say I have no logs, what that means is that we won't record what you're doing.
And do most VPNs do that?
Yeah.
They all say they have no logs. All of them say they have no logs. Yeah.
They say we won't log. Okay.
Because I only use a VPN when I go to Europe to like log into my Netflix. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm like, in the United States, I'm going to get Love is Blind.
I can tell you that I'm not logging. They never said, we don't know what you're doing.
Okay. So they can monitor.
They know 100% what you're doing online.
But if they don't log, if the government goes and says, hey, so-and-so, I want this information because they might have said something. Can you give it to me?
Hmm.
And they say, well, we don't keep logs. Do they still have a way to pull that back or no?
Well, okay. Maybe the VPN provider is not logging. Are the server providers logging? Is the government already logging preemptively? Is there a gag order in place so that they can log, but they tell you they're not logging because they officially, per law, cannot tell you because of the gag order? you are putting a lot of trust into technology companies and organization, right? That's the whole problem with the VPN. And that's the problem with a lot of technology companies, is that they are pure trust-based models. We don't log, we don't log, we log. Great. And like, oh, look, we have an audit that says we didn't log for this 1 month. Great. What did you do 1 month before the audit? Mm. What did you do 1 month after the audit? And if you actually read the audits, what it says is, well, at that time, per their thing, they did not log.
Also, who is the governing body of auditors?
There is none,
right? They just self-proclaim that they...
Well, they'll hire some company that says they log, they check, but then they'll spot check like two or three servers. But if you have 10,000 servers or 5,000 servers, they check every single server. They check every single...
Definitely not.
So from a...
It's completely trust-based. You have to trust them.
So from a person who doesn't understand all the technology behind it, what you're saying is the way they've built it, there's just a way, if they wanted to pull it up.
Correct.
If they wanted to.
Any given time, any given day.
And there's no other VPNs out there just with the same ethos that you guys have, saying, hey, we don't even.
There are companies that have tried to solve this problem.
Yeah.
I just don't think they solve the problem.
Okay.
Because if you say we don't log, great. Okay, we worked another company and we're splitting the architecture, and we're going to check the user information, and that company is going to check your traffic, and therefore this is safe. Well, no, because now instead of subpoenaing one company, I just got a subpoena two, and I still have all your information. So yes, did you try to solve the problem? Sure. But did you actually solve it? Well, I'm the big government, and all I got to do is subpoena both of you? Like, no, you actually didn't solve anything. You just gave them a little bit more paperwork.
Interesting.
And so your VPN does solve this problem.
Yes. So what it does is runs through what you call these trusted execution environments. So it splits the architecture, meaning that the traffic, your identity, and where you're going is split. It goes through kind of what you call a trusted execution environment. Intel makes it, AMD makes this. And basically they're created so that no one from the outside can see what's actually going in the box.
Because it's split.
Well, it's split and you can't see inside. That's okay. What it's created for. It's created for like really highly confidential and secure key signatures. Banks use them, healthcare use them. It's so that if you want to keep certain connections ultimately private, that's what you do. What we figured out how to do is how to route internet traffic through those execution spaces. So we don't know if you're online and you're online and there's 10 different websites that were online, we can't connect you to a website.
Mm.
So if the government says, well, we want to know what's going on, well, we don't know. Like, what did James Lee do? We have no, it's impossible.
You definitely need to get this.
I have it already.
It is what's going on? And in that, we obfuscate by putting in like fake dummy packets. So it changed the time.
Okay, so what you're saying is, let's say my identity's in there. So he's like, hey, he could have looked at 1,000 of these websites. We don't really know where he is.
We don't know. And he's like, okay, well, maybe you can pattern recognition it because this guy, when this guy's online, there's 1,000 websites going on. But how do we know that you're on this server and this server and this server and this server and this server? I say, well, they can compromise someone. Maybe. But then now I have to guess like where you're going to log in from, what your IP address is going to be. I have to figure that out. And then I have to figure out which server that you choose to go on is the server that you go on to. Like, there's a lot of things that have to happen. It's a really big operation in order to capture one person specifically. And the reality of the world is that if an agency or a bad actor wants to target you specifically, there are so many ways to do it. Meaning a VPN isn't like this full comprehensive shield.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the save all for all of your internet privacy. But what it does is the first layer of protection.
Mm, everybody should have it.
Everyone should have a VPN. And it's the first
layer. What's the name of your VPN?
VP.net. We can go to vp.net/5149. But it's the first layer of protection for your internet privacy.
So for me, I don't use a VPN unless I'm traveling.
Hmm.
I should.
You should. What you think.
Everybody should.
Definitely use it when you travel. If you go into any public Wi-Fi, to go on public Wi-Fi without a VPN is like absolutely crazy.
Why? Explain to me. Just as like a...
Because all it takes is someone, say you're at the Hyatt and you're in your room. And you're like, oh, I'm going to get online. And it says Hyatt. Hyatt 1. I'm like, okay, I'm going to get on that one. You have no idea if that's the Hyatt network or not. I can be the room.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I can be in the room next door.
And I like, just named, and somebody just named it Hyatt. I
just made a fake network. I'm going to collect everyone's data, and I'm going to name it Hyatt One.
And so when you log on to that Hyatt One, if there was a bad actor in the room next to me, they could get all of my information on my computer.
At minimum, they can see what you're doing, where you're going online.
Mm.
If I am a bad actor and I want to figure out information about you, if I want to target you, like your internet browser history is probably the most private thing a person has.
Sure.
Because if it's your TikTok feed, it's algorithmic driven and you don't really choose what you watch. But when you search on the internet, I kind of know everything about you.
And what you're thinking, right? Because it's like, you're...
What are you thinking? Where are you going to go on vacation? Where are you going to eat? How many people in your party? What business are you thinking about? Are you having business problems? Are you having relationship problems?
Mm-hmm.
I can figure out almost your entire life by knowing what you browse on the internet.
Yeah.
Well, my question is, has the government, like, I know you're not that big yet, but as you grow, right, I suspect that the governments are not going to like this service of yours. Let's say now you have a significant market share. Do you think about that down the line?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely a concern, which is why we've went out and we've published the source code for what happens in the enclave. So it's published. Every time you log in, you're given your enclave code and your hash. So basically what it is if you're a programmer, you're familiar with computers, you can go to the GitHub, you can create the entire code, you can remake it, and then you can compare the hash from what you create to what we publish and what we publish as the hash, meaning that you will know for sure at any given time that the server you are connecting is running the code that we say it's running. So you can at least at minimum verify, which is why it's VPN, verify privacy. You can verify your privacy in real time. And what we did was that's intentional, because if the government ever forces us to backdoor and change the code even a little bit, everyone will know.
Mm.
And the client is set up, which is open source too. You can check out the client. The client is set up so that if there's any change or alteration in the code of the enclave, then the client won't actually connect to it. So we had to build all these mechanisms in ahead of time, because again, because the government can force you to make a change and not tell anyone, they put you on the gag order.
But this is kind of a safety where now everybody would know.
Exactly. Everyone would know, no one would connect, and it just all burns down together. So that's actually the risk in it, is that if the government forces to change it, then no one can get online and people are really mad because our system is down.
Yeah.
But the reality is that we did the right thing, because we built all these safety mechanisms in place, not to protect you only from bad actors on the internet, but from different organizations all over the world
as well. Right. Yeah, let's say you become corrupt one day and say, I'm going to now use this data to my advantage.
You don't have to trust us, because that's why we publish it all. Because people can change, things can change. The whole idea is to create a system where you don't have to trust anybody.
So as a serial entrepreneur, you like to solve problems. And it sounds like this one is pretty much solved, right?
I don't know about it solved, because it's not easy getting...
No, but... Well,
the question for us always, and in going with this, and this is a conversation we had over and over and over again, is people say they care about privacy, but how much do people actually care? Normalized to...
Yeah, you exchange privacy.
I mean, all I know is that I don't take my phones into the bathroom.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I could be showering. Someone, I don't know this to be true, but I just have this in my head, could tap into my camera, record, whatever. Yeah. I mean, I just don't trust the technology. But I feel like most people take their phones everywhere. They do everything.
I mean, when's the last time you took a shit without your phone?
Me? Well,
she does. Apparently, she does not.
Shit.
But if you ask
all the time,
exactly.
I've done it.
I don't know. But my husband, I mean,
I can't all go the time through without my phone.
Either can he? I'm like, this is why you take 30 minutes.
I'm like,
you're scrolling.
Yeah. I'm like, so much anxiety. If I'm sitting there and I'm on my phone, I'm like, fuck, what am I supposed to do with myself? Like, I'm so addicted. You know,
but yeah, you take it everywhere, and so you need this type of protection. But I was gonna say, to me, it sounds like this is mostly solved, maybe not fully. But do you have any other problems that you're looking to solve next? Anything on the horizon for you?
I think, as far as problems to solve in technology, I think it's as we go into this technology future and they strip away humanity, we used to make, I used to make fun of liberals because they were like, oh yeah, you got to pursue liberal arts. And like, oh yeah, you got an art degree, art history degree. You have a, you know, random like music theology degree. Like, it's not going to be valuable to you in your life. You're an idiot. Like, do something in science.
Kanye says like everybody should just study engineering. He had this one viral.
Yeah.
He's like, everybody should just be engineers.
Just be engineers. And this was kind of the push, and the ultra liberals like, no, like you have to care about humanity. You have to care about culture. Like, no, that's stupid. Like, you're going to be broke. You're going to be broke for the rest of your life. That was kind of the talking point of the right and for me. But as we go into this technological future, it's like even a broken clock is right twice, mm-hmm. you know, that's actually going to be correct.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people who focus on creativity, focus on thought, focus on things like philosophy, they're going to have more value in a AI driven calculated future over the people who work on things like logic and calculations and memorization, because AI just replaced all your jobs.
Yeah, you're going to do it way better.
So somehow this liberal ideology was so wrong for the last 20 years. Somehow, and not in, I don't think it was intentional.
But was it wrong or was it just right the whole time? Like, we should have people studying humanities and art and things like that. We just need people like that.
It wasn't as valuable. Out. Now it's going to be okay. Valuable.
It wasn't as valuable.
Got you.
You know, I don't think it was wrong. I don't think it was as valuable. But in the future, it's going to have ultimate value.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because now the most valuable, you know, plumbers. Like, my thing breaks. It's like, I can't have AI solve my plumbing problem. Mm-hmm. I have to actually have a plumber come over. So, yeah. Like, those things are going to increase in value as the demand changes.
Yeah, value is in scarcity.
Scarcity.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Whatever is scarce is most valuable. And if AI can replace calculations, can replace logic, can replace a lot of things that most of the world focuses their life doing, then people that are more human, people that have more compassion,
mm-hmm.
people that have more empathy, they become scarce because everyone else went a certain way. So somehow, just happens to be that those people that were overly compassionate, overly empathetic, we thought, oh, you guys are dreamers, you guys are a bunch of tree huggers, like you guys don't get it. Fuck, they're actually going to be right and more valuable in the future. It's just funny how life works that way, you know?
Well, do you think that's going to transition to or translate to content making as well, in that the free thinkers, quote unquote, out there are maybe going to become more, or they're going to have better incentive structures in place to support those types of creators versus the ones that toe the party line or are receiving some talking points, this kind of thing? Do you think that'll be the case as well, or
I don't think the algorithmic overlords will incentivize it because they like the AI content. They can get unlimited content over and over again. People pick niches. You set up a certain AI agent or bot to make certain content.
But do you think people will want to listen to that, though?
Humanity will naturally gravitate to people
offline doing these things.
Yeah. Even if it's online, people who make mistakes, people who stutter. And it's going to be weird because we lived in an age where people who are really well-spoken were kind of really, you gravitate towards and you really, but people's speeches get so perfect because of AI that the people that stutter, that seem a little autistic, the people that seem really weird, they're going to be the most popular.
Interesting.
The most one you gravitate towards because they're going to feel the most human. People are going to look for flaw.
Well, and I think they're going to look for people that have the ability to communicate. Because I just learned last week that Gen Z has this huge problem with talking on the phone. So much so that there was this family and they wanted their kid to go to Cornell and their kid got waitlisted and they were up in arms about this. And the kid, they made some calls, they had connections, and they said, we'll do a phone interview. And the kid has such a phobia of talking on the phones, he said, Cornell wasn't meant to be. No, and I was like, what the, you know, because I grew up where, you know, you'd be on the phone under the pillow on a three-way call in some grade. All I did was talk on the phone, you know? And so I think communication is going to be one of those things too, especially the Gen Zers. Maybe it'll switch back in like your daughter's era where now you're kind of correcting this, where you're like less screen time. But yeah, I think people are probably going to get offline or be on, you know, and want to interact with people that know how to communicate. It seems like that might start to be a loss. So great.
Optimistic. I like the direction. You know, sometimes I feel like
I'm super black pill.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. You're typically pretty black pill, but this is kind of an optimistic take in that you're seeing maybe incentive structures that are gonna align to promote more humanity type of behavior.
Yeah, I think, you know, we talk about the pendulum
swing. I was just gonna say, yeah.
Right. And we always frame it in this left versus right pendulum swing, but that's actually not true. Mm-hmm. The left and right is not real, you know. It's more of a societal humanity type of pendulum swing. And as we go towards, and especially when the government and the older generation tells the youngest generation to do something, the natural inclination of the youngest generation is to reject it. It doesn't matter if it's right or wrong. It doesn't matter what the issue is. Whatever they say you're supposed to do, they're going to just do the opposite.
Damn, libraries are going to be lit. People are going to be getting off ChatGPT. I love libraries.
I love libraries.
But I'm just saying, maybe that will be, you know, the pendulum swings back. Everybody needs to use ChatGPT, this and that. And then you realize, oh, wait, they're limiting information. I notice that all the time when I do my research. Maybe it'll cause people to go back to books.
Yeah, I mean, which I would think be you see it in the trend for kids to go to wired headphones. You know, like they don't want to use the wireless headphones anymore. They use wired headphones.
Well, that's because of the radiation.
Know that.
Yeah.
I think it's uncool. Like, I think it's more of a cool factor.
Yeah,
right?
Because every time you watch TV, the old guy on TV has got his AirPods on. He's like, dude, that's fucking gay. Right? I'm going to wear the wired.
Yeah.
You know? So the younger generation is going to wired. There's this trend of younger generation going to parties where everyone locks their phone in a box.
Really? I love that.
And then you have to go to the party, but you're not allowed to have your phone.
Maybe they'll bring back the wind-up cameras.
That's popular too. Yes, I was talking about that on our live stream a couple weeks ago. Yeah, I was on a trip to Europe and I was hanging out with the Gen Zers at the surf house thing. And there were multiple. It was not just one person. It was like three or four people with literally either disposable cameras or the old school cameras, you know, that you put film in, but not like a high quality, you know, Nikon or, you know, Panasonic that like that professionals use. It's like a shitty camera from 20, 30 years ago that was like off the rack. It was like $20 or something like that. And they just rather have that. And they take a photo and they're not going to see it until they're done with their trip. But they're like in the moment, they're talking, they're connecting, enjoying company versus trying to take the best photo possible, which I think we grew up in an age where Instagram was like the foremost app and people wanted the best looking photo. It was like, you know, you're doing it for the gram. Like that was the thing that was huge, right? You go to a place not to enjoy the actual place, but to find the best photo op. So I'm happy that it's going back the other direction. So we might be in for a nice.
I'd be happy about it.
You could say.
I think so.
I like that idea.
Yeah, because again, the youngest generation, it's funny because we talk about the pendulum swing and we think that it's the older generation, people in charge that swing that pendulum, but it's not true. It's always the youngest
generation. It's always the youngest.
You know, and we always discredit them, but I feel like we discredit the youngest generation because we want to make it feel like as the older generation, you're right.
Yeah.
Of course you do.
So, yeah, to sort of wind down the conversation today. I wanted to ask you, so then in the future, what are you prioritizing in terms of your professional endeavors, right? Like what kind of content are you hoping to make? Because I know for you, right, you were kind of at one point, a conservative darling. I think they liked having an Asian in the group, right? It was nice for them.
Okay.
Yeah, right. And you kind of rebuffed that. You rejected a lot of those offers to be in that cool kids club, right? So tell me a little bit about like that transition and then what you're looking to do going forward.
Well, again, I think the future isn't people who just seem honest and genuine and relatable. That's going to be the future. People that are willing to be wrong. Because again, as technology tries to make everything seem so perfect, your human inclination will go opposite because we are not technology creatures. We're actually humans. So I think being in that way is the future. I think that's the best way to do. I think live content will be the future because there's nowhere to hide. People want to see your flow.
And live shows. Live shows. All live of that shows. Kind of stuff. Yeah.
I think in-person events are going to grow because people are going to want a reason to go out. So I'm really focusing more on that way, which is just put shit ideas out there. And it's fine. It's okay that you're wrong. You know, there's this idea that if you put something on the internet, you can't be wrong. But the information that we have and the data set we have to pull from is flawed. So it's impossible to be correct all the time or at a high percentage because we are constantly filled with flawed data. But, you know, I think if you practice critical thinking, you think for yourself, at least you're exercising your brain, because you don't, I don't want to fall into this Borg of oneness. I think that's weird and crazy.
Yeah. Is that why you rejected to be a part of that club? Like, why did you ultimately decide, yeah, that's not for me?
Well, it's
no, they all say the same things, like, you, to your point.
Yeah. It's all propaganda. You know, there is propagandists. That's really what it is. You know, they're a part of the propaganda machine. I don't think they're actually adding any value to society. They're just trying to capture attention in this attention economy to have you think about what the establishment wants you to think about. And I'm very anti that. You know, I don't care if it's something I agree with or I disagree with, actually. It's both sides. If you're trying to force people to believe a certain way and push your narrative, especially when you're knowingly lying to us, I don't care if I agree with your take. I'm still against it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I think that's more dangerous. Again, more dangerous than left versus right. It's this whole idea of people are losing their humanity. And I think that's the most important. That's what we actually have to be fighting for. So I want to always make sure that I'm standing on team humanity.
Mm. For sure.
Team humanity.
That's what I always say. I've said this many times. I feel like we're in a spiritual war and you're either team good or you're team evil.
Mm.
And I just want to be on team good. I might be wrong, but I think that's so important to distinguish.
Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of what you're saying.
So where can people follow Matt Kim, team humanity?
Team humanity. If you go to whatever your favorite doom scroll mechanism device
is. Yeah.
Because I've seen you type in Matt Kim.
Yeah, sorry to cut you off, but really quick. I've seen you do more monologues recently again. Was that a conscious decision?
That was our conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't want to do them. I hated them.
And you're like, well, I started doing them more.
And I was like, oh, I really think it's bad. I don't think it's doing anything. And you're like, dude, I think you should do them. Like, oh. And I thought about it. I'm like, all right, I'm going to do one. And then I got all these comments like, man, like, where you been? I can't believe you're doing these again. And I got so many messages and so many comments like, dude, I'm glad you're back. Like, the world is crazy. And I feel like we just want to hear what you think about certain things. And all of a sudden, I felt like the social responsibility that, okay, I should do these again. Not necessarily because I overly want to, because they're actually time consuming and there's zero money in it. It was started as a hobby and I just kind of got sidetracked to other hobbies. But once I got that response from people like, dude, you really need to start doing this again. We really like them. And I saw how many people share them. Then I was like, okay, I think I have to do these. I'm supposed to do these. It's not something I necessarily overly want to do.
So James is the reason.
Oh, 100%.
Well, thank you.
Wow. James the reason.
Well, where can people find one more time the handle?
Just search Matt Kim on whatever your doom scroll device is. If you want to hear me talk long, then typically I'm on YouTube. If you want to see the short form content, then X, TikTok, or Instagram, type in Matt Kim. You should find me.
Wow. Well, I know that for sure. I appreciate Matt Kim's voice. He's one of the, because I'm so busy all the time with the, you know, production of my content. I don't actually have a lot of time to consume content sometimes, but I know Matt, your podcast is in that regular rotation of the 2 to 3 podcasts I listen to every week. I always love tuning in to see what you guys get up to, because you guys, you know, you're unfiltered. So like, I want to hear what Matt
and you're not bought and paid for, which is so refreshing. And I'm just so grateful you spent time with us. You're such an amazing person, entrepreneur, content creator, and dad, most importantly.
Most importantly.
So thank you for sharing all of your wisdom with us today. It was awesome.
Guys, I appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate you, man. Pleasure as always.